Hi, Frank H is speaking for us today from Whitby Free Tinkers. Lovely man. And Frank, go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Thanks for inviting me, and thank you for hosting the meeting. Frank, alcoholic, hell of a time saying that at one time. Whitby Free Thinkers, Whitby, Ontario. The accent you hear is not Canadian, obviously. I was born and raised in the Kingdom of Fife on the east coast of Scotland. Father was a coal miner, mother was a homemaker. It was interesting upbringing because it plays a part in why I could not reach out for help later in life when addiction struck. It was a type of wee town, coal mining, hard men. Any discussion of feelings or weakness was usually resulted in criticism or violence towards the person that was showing the weakness. No encouragement to ask for help, be independent, that type of thing. And also, the word alcoholic was never used. I remember my mother occasionally saying, "Yeah, he likes a good drink," which I think was some sort of code for, "Oh, he drinks too much." Anyway, 1975, me and my lovely wife, who you might have just seen scoot behind me, we immigrated to Canada. Coming to Canada was a great thing. Coming, being a new immigrant is tough. Had to work very hard, very independently. I want to jump forward now from 1975 to the year 2000. When I look back, between that years, from 75 to 2000, alcohol was not a problem. Like, I enjoyed alcohol. It was fun. I had a lot of fun with it over the years. It was always part of my life. It's part of our lives. It was part of no, but there was no any issues, no police, no domestics, no drunk driving, nothing. I had got work with a large corporation in Ontario. I was doing very well. When I look back in the year 2000, two children, two grandchildren, I now have five, lovely home. I had four Harley Davidsons, believe it or not. Two cars, everything was looking good. What changed in 2000 was I moved into management in the company that I was working for. And what changed, I now looking back in it, was a bit of ego started to develop, and also work-life balance. I could see it now. At the time, I wouldn't have, but my life started to change. I started managing a large group of people. I became the Mr. Fix It at work. I was already the patriarch of the family, the person you went to when you needed help or you needed an answer. So the ego part of me started to build. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Mr. Fix It kind of label at work and at home. Something I fell into easily. So the work-life balance started to slip. So there was more and more work getting involved in my life. That was the year 2000. So if you jump forward to year 2008, I've reached a stage now where I'm managing a large group of people, 230 people roughly. I'm on call 24/7. My work-life balance has reached a bad state, so there's virtually no play part is work, sleep, to work. Because I'm on call a lot, I'm not drinking a lot, but I'm starting at night to drink every single day a glass of spirits to help me calm down to go to bed. That was in 2008. I'd been building over 2000 to 2008. Still no serious issues with alcohol. But every night, a glass of whatever I used was just drinking, spirits, to help me sleep. I was up early. That 2008, between 2008 and 2012, my responsibilities at work, my ego built again because I was given even more responsibility, more accountability. Work-life balance was done. I was sleeping basically enough to allow me to work. The drinking at night had went, still at 9 o'clock at night, had went to a fairly large tumbler of spirits. Because don't you know, I deserved it. Because I was doing all these things at work. I was the man. The ego was, if you'd have met me around about that time, my head was so freaking big, you would never have got me in. I'm surprised it stayed on my shoulders. It was so large. Very opinionated, very judgmental, very dogmatic. So life moves on. In 2012, I damn well retired. We had a great year. We did a lot of things. There were big honors to the company I worked for. I was part of that. So I went from a high of being the man to cutting the grass. When I look back at it now, that was a disastrous time for me. The 9 o'clock drink that I used to have, which was a rather large tumbler, became a 7 o'clock drink, became a 5 o'clock drink. I can see now at that time that what I became, and I'm ashamed to admit it, was a manipulative, cunning, closet drinking, lying son of a bitch during that time. From 2012, my use of alcohol over that period of time accelerated rapidly. I was consuming alcohol a considerable amount. I'm not proud of it. I had the amazing ability to consume alcohol like a half bowl of vodka before lunch and be quite coherent, quite able to continue conversations. Not proud of it, but that's the way it was. My wife had no idea this was going on. She only saw the 9 o'clock, right? It was weird how my ability at the time to consume alcohol in quite large quantities and hide it from everybody. Obviously, you can't hide it forever. So around about the end of 2013, I mean, I retired in 2012. Now, by the time 2013 comes around, I'm actually getting up to have a drink at 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that, to go back to sleep. Drinking in first thing in the morning and so on. So around the end of 2013, my wife, obviously the addiction is starting to show both physically and mentally. He drags my ass down to the doctor and he asks me, of course, am I drinking? And of course, being a good alcoholic, I freaking lie. So My wife was in the room with me. She says, no, he's not drinking much once a night. So he puts me on a drug called Wellbutrin. Wellbutrin is an interesting drug. You're not supposed to drink on a Wellbutrin. But you see, none of that applies to Frank, you see. Because Frank is Mr. Fix-It. None's ever going to hurt Mr. Frank. He's a strong guy. He's an independent guy. So he takes Wellbutrin and keeps drinking at a fairly steady pace. So the drug Wellbutrin plus the alcohol, I'm starting to fall down a few times. I'm still drinking in the closet, still hiding it. So in around March 21st, I think it was, Sunday, I went to bed early, got up during the night to go to the bathroom, and had the first of four grand mal seizures. So if you ever see a grand mal seizure, probably one of the scariest things for a human being to go through. I was in the bathroom, en suite. I chewed my mouth, my tongue. I was in grand mal seizures. My wife heard me. She got up, obviously frightened the hell out of her, put me in a kind of recovery state, called 911. I had a second grand mal seizure at that time and did some more damage. When the paramedics arrived, while they would take me down the stair in the gurney, I had a third grand mal seizure. When they got me to the hospital, my wife was outside the examination room, and I had a fourth grand mal seizure. And during that time, the doctors, she heard them say, we're losing them, we're losing them. And at that time, they intubated me, which is where they put a tube down your throat. And in the process of doing that, which is understandable, there was a rather rush. They ripped my vocal cords. Hence, I have this kind of raspy voice. And I went into a 9-day coma. And I went into a coma. They didn't put me in a coma. I went into a coma. Of course, they didn't know why it happened. So they did all kinds of tests. My wife had been stayed in the hospital. After 3 days, all the machines, you see people, I've got a picture of myself lying in hospital, hooked up to all kinds of bloody machines. And all the machines were telling me, this guy's done. He's dead. There's no brainwaves. He's dead. So they call my family together and basically ask, would you like to unplug? Now, fortunately, they chose no at the time. Otherwise, Mark, you'd be looking for another bloody speaker today. They gave me a bit more time. My wife went home at that time. And obviously, there was a bit of mess in the bathroom. She went downstairs in my workshop where I used to hide all my drinking. And when she was getting some stuff, she disturbed something and out from the ceiling dropped a bottle of vodka, empty, of course. So the jig was up. So she went up in the ceiling, the suspended ceiling. I think she took down 38 bottles at that time. There was a total of 50-odd bottles found in the house. And actually, we moved out of that house about 18 months ago. We were still finding the freaking things, believe it or not. So the jig was up. So just as well, I was in hospital. Because she was a Scottish lady. She has obviously the Scottish temper and the Scottish temperament. She said, kill me for sure. So I was lucky I was in hospital. After about 8 or 9 days, 8 days, I started to show some signs of reviving. When I woke up, I could neither speak nor hold a cup in two hands nor walk. I was bent over. I had what we call a Zimmer frame in Scotland, walking frame. Bent over like a half-shut knife. And I remember my family sitting at the bottom of my bedside, and I'm asking when I'm coming home. And my daughter, who's very like me, very strong-willed, she turned around and says, "You're not coming home. You're an alcoholic. You're going in treatment." I was so angry at them, I wouldn't speak to them. I mean, I just recovered, for God's sake. I would not speak to them. So freaking angry. After a couple of days, my son took me to a treatment center, the first of many. I still wasn't an alcoholic in my mind. Didn't want anything to do with it. That was my first exposure to AA in the treatment center. So for the next 3 years, from 14 to 2017, in June 9th, I persisted with the delusion and the denial of trying to drink. During that time, I spent 6 periods of in-house treatment, totally 26 weeks, at various rehab locations, three aftercare programs. I was in the psychiatric ward for 7 days. I was twice Form 1, which is where they commit you to psychiatric ward, and if you run away, the police come after you. I was declared missing twice, handcuffed. I was found by the police. I had my license twice, my driver's license, twice medically removed. And so it goes on and on and on. The list is a full page for 3 years. I actually was going in and out of AA. I was calling you lot AA Nazis, saying it was a cult. I was going AA and taking a bottle of booze with me in my bicycle bags. I was kind of trying to, I don't know what I was doing. My brain was shot. In the last 8 months of that 3 year period, I was in a shitty little basement apartment because my family had given up. And I was being visited. I was just drinking a bottle of vodka every single day. My family had a personal support worker come visit me 2 or 3 times a day to see if I was still alive, because nobody wanted to find me dead. Funnily enough, during that 3 year period, I had read I had some periods of sobriety, but in one of the periods, I read this book, and again, I only read what I wanted to read, what I wanted to read into anything I read, that the brain can heal itself. So I thought, okay, if I don't drink for a freaking year, my brain will heal. I'll cure this freaking addiction shit. Because, you know, I thought there's got, I can't, my Mr. Fix-It brain, my ego could not believe that I let harm to myself. And I couldn't believe there wasn't a way out. I kept thinking there's got to be a way out. So I stopped drinking. This was during this three-year period. I was still at home. I stopped drinking. And this part is kind of interesting because I stopped drinking. I made sure I didn't drink for 10 months. The purpose was I thought my brain's going to heal. So after 10 months, my wife and I went to the Bahamas. Life's trip. I knew I was going to drink in the Bahamas. We got there late Friday. We went down to the bar. I got a drink for her and I got a drink for me. I think it was a rum and coke. Had that drink. We went to bed. I said, "That's it. Freaking cure. I've done it. I'm done it. I'm fine. I'm done it. I'm out of this shit." So the next morning, we had a facing the ocean room. I said, "I'm going to go." It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I go down and I get 2 coffees. Guess what? The only bloody place home to get coffee is the bar, 24-hour bar. So I walk into the bar. I said to the gentleman there, I said, "Give me 2 cups of coffee. Oh, and by the way, give me a glass of vodka." He looks at me like I'm freaking crazy, which I am. Pours me a big tumbler of straight vodka. I down it. I disappear for 2 days. My wife finds me 2 days later on the beach, on a chair, passed out. My wallet is on my chest, empty. The first of those 2 days was my wife's birthday. The second day was our anniversary. So coming home in the plane was very, very strained, as you can imagine. And again, I got chucked back into treatment because my family just, they would throw me back into treatment thinking that was the solution. We actually spent $100,000 on treatment, 28 weeks in-house treatments and various treatment centers around Ontario. So the last 8 months, as I say, I was in drinking my head off in a basement apartment. And I don't know how, somehow I reached out and my daughter arranged me to go back into treatment. This would be the sixth time. I walked into that treatment center. It was in June 9th, 2017, at 11 o'clock. And I walked in and there wasn't a soul there. It was really weird. Normally they're very busy. And I looked around and I thought, is this going to be it? Is this going to be your fucking life? Is this it? And I said, no, that's it. So I think they talk about a turning point in the book, big book there. So that was my turning point. Surrender, call it what you want. I don't care. You know, gave up, I don't know. And I decided I needed freaking help. So what did I do? I came to AA because I knew you guys knew. I'd got enough from the previous book, stuff with AA. And I knew there was help here. I got a psychiatrist. I got a therapist. I got put on medication for anxiety and depression. I got regular meetings with a therapist. I got a sponsor. I started coming to AA. I kept my world really small. I moved out of a shitty little basement apartment, come and sell a nice place. I kept my world small for a year. I did nothing but go to AA. Then I moved back in with my wife. So what is it like now? Believe it or not, my family are all back. And trust me, because I've been accountable and responsible. I'm trusted with my grandchildren. I've got 5 grandchildren. I take the 3-year-old skating. Nobody bats an eye, which is amazing. I'm responsible. I'm accountable. I do what I'm on time when I say I'm there. I do Zoom 5-6 nights a week, which is great. What do I have to watch for? Okay. There's somebody at the back of my head who I have to be damn careful for, because I had many years of alcohol as a friend. I'm 5.5 years sober. I still don't know if I've fully grieved the loss of that friend. So my focus now, when I get that bugger talking to me, is I have to play the tape forward, right? I play this game with myself. How long? I call it how long. How long would it be before your wife gets suspicious because your behavior changes? How long is it going to be before she smells it on your breath? How long is it going to be before she finds your first ball hidden in the house? How long, how long, how long? That's my play my tape forward. That helps me keep sober. Obviously, totally committed to AA. I'm no longer, after three years, I got off of medication slowly. I'm no longer on medication. It did help me. It was part of my process of getting getting sober and getting safe, it did help me. I still see a therapist on a regular basis, right? Because I still want that. I do, like I say, I do Zoom a lot. I'm still not, I'm grateful I'm sober. I'm grateful that everything I've got that sobriety has given me. I hear sometimes people say I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'll never say that. I'm grateful for what sobriety gives me. I certainly don't call any AA Nazis. I don't think AA's a cult. I think secular AA is phenomenal. I still occasionally go to traditional AA. That's fine. Doesn't bother me. Everybody's got a path to sobriety. My path is maybe different from others. So what? No big deal. So that's kind of where I am. It's being a crazy. It's been a crazy journey. Crazy journey. And I am so glad I'm sober now and have the benefits of the sobriety and the work. But for me, I think it's always going to be work. I don't think I could ever let my guard down. If I let my guard down, it'd be too freaking dangerous. Anyway, enough of my rambling. Thank you very much for Mark. And I hope you didn't need subtitles for anything I said. I tried to keep it as much kind of as Scottish English as I can. I always think it's funny when you see Scottish people getting interviewed in the TV and the British TV. They've usually got subtitles below there. It's always funny. Anyway, good to see you all. Enough of my rambling.